want apple juice.
Lucas wants apple juice.
I know, I heard him
can
say
I
that.
Can I have apple juice?
Yeah, you can have apple juice.
Can I have soda?
Yes, you can have soda.
Can I press that button?
No, you can't press that button.
Why?
Because that's going to play the theme song. I'm not ready to start the pot.
Just hi, Dad. He's my dad.
James Gutman!
What is up, guys? James Gutman here on Hi Pod. I'm Dad. Welcome back to another edition of the show. It is Friday. It is a Friday before Thanksgiving. I am thankful that you are here. Whether you found me on HiPodOnDad.com or any of the streaming services from Apple to Amazon to ones that I don't even barely know what some of these things are, but they're all there. So check it out wherever you get your podcast. You will find Hi Pod. I'm Dad. I appreciate you guys showing your support, giving a like, giving a subscribe, you know, hitting that bell and that subscribe button. I don't know, man, I get into that YouTuber mode, like, what's up, guys? Hit, smash that like button. So smash whatever, man. Go smash it away. And thank you for your support. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it was a good week. Big week for the blog. If you guys don't know, HiBlogOmDad.com is where everything began way back in 2017. I've been writing twice a week, Monday, Wednesday, with the podcast every Friday. And this week I did two of them. The one on Wednesday was kind of a big deal for me. It approached a subject that I don't talk about, especially publicly. It's about kind of growing up, and it's about changing the way, I mean, the idea in the end of it was that it changed the way I parent, and in many ways who I am, what I became. The article was called The Year Santa Gave Me Coal for Christmas, and that's legit. That's real. That's not a metaphor for the coal of our lives that give us despair. No, it was coal. It was rocks of coal. And it was a crazy story to tell, and what's really crazy about it is just one of a lot I could have chosen, some far worse. But I thought this one kind of drove the point home the most. Now, if you didn't read it, I'll give you kind of a quick overview. I was 8 years old, and it was a good year. That's the other thing, too. When I tell this story, I think the assumption is, oh, you must have done something bad, like burned down the garage. And I didn't. I didn't do anything bad. In fact, that was the year I won the award for the outstanding third grader in my school. In Lindenhurst, New York, we used to have this award. I don't know if they still have it. Maybe they do. The TAL Award, Teachers Association of Lindenhurst. They would give it to one kid from each grade in every elementary school. So for my school that I went to Albany Avenue, I was in third grade. I won the award. It was a great year. I did really good that year. So of course, you're eight. You believe in everything, any holiday that has something mystical attached to it, that is completely legit in your own eyes. Whether, as time goes on, I know we all become disenchanted, but at 8 years old, you're still writing letters and going to the mall and sitting on Santa's knee. And I was doing the same thing. And I was excited, man. Christmas was coming up and I loved Christmas. We had some issues with Christmas before then. It wasn't maybe the most fun thing in the world. There were some issues that sprung up around it, but still, outside of just my personal universe, Christmas itself, the holiday, the idea behind it, Santa, all that good stuff was so exciting for an eight-year-old that it kind of erased some of the other issues that were going on. There were issues going on. There were things going on in my life even at that age. And even to say it now, it's weird because I've become like disconnected from a lot of things in my life. And I feel like sometimes saying them out loud, either here on the podcast or in the blog, allows me to speak about it as if I'm talking about another eight-year-old or another kid. And when I talk about it in that way, I'm like, oh my God. And I get it. I told the story in the blog about how sometimes I'll tell my daughter an anecdote. Like, we'll be driving and I'll be like, hey, you got to be careful doing that. When I was a kid, blah, 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 blah. And I rattle off this story and she goes, Dad, that's a terrible story. Like, it is a terrible story. I didn't even realize it. And that's kind of happening here as I'm telling you guys this. I'm like, well, there were issues. I was eight. So it kind of sucks. But I was excited. I was excited about Christmas. And then that morning I woke up and I always remember with Christmas, I always kind of use this example to explain to people how my son, Lucas, nonverbal, he has autism, but he gets up sometimes the same way I get up at Christmas, where the second my eyes kind of opened a little bit, even if I was like dead exhausted, I would drag my body out of bed because it was Christmas morning and go see the stuff. I remember I did it that year and I went out there and I don't really remember a lot of the stuff. I used a picture in the block. I think that that was the right year. It might not have even been the right year. If somebody could tell me where those wrestling figures, what year they're from, maybe you'll know when it was. I got up and I looked at all the presents. I was very excited. And then as, you know, the morning went on, somebody suggested, why don't you go look in your playroom? And when you're a kid and people say something like that, it's exciting. Now, I had a playroom up until I had a sibling who was born about a year or two later. So this was like, you know, the age period. It was before the room got changed into a different room. So it was still my room. And I remember I opened the door and I thought it was a surprise, you know, because that's what you do at Christmas. You tell somebody, hey, I think you should go check your closet. And then you go into the closet and there's like, you know, a bunny or some, I don't know what the hell people do. Or like look in the driveway, you know, and then there's like a car outside. That's my car. So that's what I thought. Why don't you go look in your playroom? And I remember I opened the door and there was a, in the middle of the room, a little blue bow on it, a little bag, and a note. And I went over and the note was written, even at 8, I knew that the note was looked weird because it was written as if Santa had some sort of neurological disorder because it was all shaky and just poorly done. But it said, dear Jamie, they call me Jamie when I was a kid. This coal is not because you were bad. It is because you did not keep your playroom clean. And then there was more to it, but I just freaking lost it. And I remember I looked down and I'll never forget the whole thing. The whole scene was awful because I felt like I failed life. I mean, that's a big deal. All year they tell you, like, Santa's gonna bring you coal. Don't do that. Santa's gonna bring you. And here I was, I had coal. There were kids in my school who set stuff on fire, who came in with like, you know, no stories of coal. No one else got coal. I had coal. It killed me. I couldn't fathom it. I didn't know what I did. And I hated it. I was crying. I was freaking out. You know, you're 8 years old. And at one point, a neighbor was going to come by with gifts. And I remember I ran to the kitchen. I threw it under the table. That's how little I was. I was like, no one else said, yeah. And I threw it. And somebody laughed. One of the adults responsible for doing this, you know, part of the big funny prank, laughed. I remember thinking, how could anyone laugh? And I heard it was awful. Years went by, and I, as I grew up and I went through life, I realized what it was. And there was no lesson behind it. I think sometimes people like the idea of sort of, I would say hazing. I likened it to when I was in my fraternity in college, you would get in, you would pledge for an entire semester, right? Like, fraternity brothers would make you do interviews and get them food, and it's everything. It's not as bad as they make it out on TV. Like, no one's doing really weird stuff, but they make you do stuff. You're like their servants for 6 weeks. It's a work, as they say, you know, a way of getting people to do things for them. You know, go buy me some cigarettes, go get me a chicken sandwich, you know, shake my hand, do a dance, you know, stupid nonsense. So you do that for 6 weeks, you go through this, and then you get in, and now you have pledges. And what happens is you freak out. You get so excited. It's called nib fever. Nib is newly initiated brother. And we had guys who had nib fever. They'd call you up. I remember this one guy, Jason, didn't change his name. He called me up. He'd be like, where are the pledges? I'm like, they're up in my room. He's like, keep them there. Keep them there. He runs up and he just like walks around laughing. I'm like, this dude's weird. And it's nib fever. It's that idea of now it's my turn. I get to be, you know, the bad guy or the hard ass and scare people. And that's what I was going through as a kid. I realized that years later that things like this that were saved, you know, because you think to yourself, if you never got to be Santa or the Easter Bunny or be the one behind one of these holidays for somebody else, you could do anything you want. You know, you can give coal a Santa. Holy cow, who does that? But nobody thinks about that. Most people wouldn't think that way, or at least not do it in a way where it's from Santa. You know, I know somebody had commented, Amanda Shreve, who's great, one of the all-time listener. She did Moment of Sanity. She wrote about her grandmother had done it and then laughed, which is, no, not great either. But that's like from a relative. And you go, oh, they're being jerks. And this was from Santa Claus. You know, and I thought it was from Santa Claus. So it was really a hazing thing just done to kind of hurt and without thinking. Or maybe thinking, but like reckless indifference. Almost like, so, you know. And it's part of a big picture. It's not It's by far not the only thing that happened or not the worst thing that happened throughout my life. And I grew up and I have kids of my own. And I hear from people all the time that'll say things to me like, well, you know, you're a good dad. You know, you were taught right. You were, you know, given the layout of how to parent. And I'm like, no, not really. I didn't really get that guidance from anyone to show me. In many ways, what I had to do was I had to admit that some of the things I saw as a kid were not the way to do things as an adult. I had to teach myself that. I had to remind myself of that. And the reason why the cycle of abuse, as they call it, usually continues for many people is because they're not able to do that. There are still people to this day that will tell you a horrific story and then justify it. You know, well, you know, it was different back then. My parents did what they thought was right. And that's great and it's wonderful. But if you think that way and you're trying to find ways to justify the unjustifiable, of course you're going to do it to your own kids. That's how you parent. Like, if you're taught, if you have people teaching you something a certain way and you think that way is right, you do that way, you know? If you convince yourself it's right. If you convince yourself, and the other thing too, and it goes back to this whole nib fever idea, if you look at it from that standpoint, like, well, it happened to me, I'll do it to mine. When I was a kid, I'd jump out the window, I'll make them jump out. If you're parenting like that, you're done. It has to come down to like, did this help me? Did this hurt me? Was it right? Was it wrong? And I was able to admit that things were wrong. There was an episode of All in the Family years ago where Archie Bunker tells a story to Meathead about how his dad locked him in the closet. And Meathead's like, oh, Archie, dad was wrong. I can't do it. Rob Reiner impression. And, you know, Carol O'Connor gets all mad. You don't say your father's wrong. And he's yelling at him. He's like, your father's never wrong. He loves you. He cares about you. And it was like that episode was supposed to illustrate to you why this dude was so messed up. You're like, oh, because he's still. But if you don't do that, if you're able to separate, I think a lot of us, we blame ourselves for a lot of things. And we look back on things like that, whether it's a particular punishment or how you were treated or the things you were told. And we blame ourselves for it. We go, like, I must have been awful. I must have been a bad kid that this had to happen to me. And you tell yourself that, and you tell yourself that, and you tell yourself that. And now you have a kid, and your kid does something similar to whatever you did at that age that got this, you know, over-the-top reaction, and then you give an over-the-top reaction. It just continues that way. But if you could turn around and say, look, that wasn't the right way to do it, then you're never going to do it. And I never do it. I couldn't even imagine. Couldn't even imagine. You know, man, Lucas doesn't really respond to, like, Elf on a Shelf anymore. You know, I mean, ever really. He's never really interacted with the Elf on the Shelf. I'll take a picture of him next to it once in a while. And my daughter's 13. So she's no longer looking for the elf to move around the house. I'm still going to move that elf. And I'm still going to do little scenery and take pictures and stuff. Because I want it to be a good time for her. I want it to be magical, you know. I want both of my kids. I mean, Lucas too. Lucas might not understand Santa. He might not understand all that stuff, but he understands getting things and getting, you know, we're going to have a good meal. We're going to set up all this party stuff. He's going to get, you know, a new iPad. Don't tell him. So I want them to love it. And to me, that's my job. And I've written about this. And here's the thing. I wrote about it like a year or two ago about how even though I hate Christmas, and God, I hated Christmas. I had a lot of stuff happen at Christmas, man. Not only this story, but like my heart surgery, December 13th, that was a big deal. I had family disappear. We had people that we were invited to holiday suddenly stop inviting us. We didn't know why. All these things happened. It would mess with your head. And you'd be worried. And I used to get anxiety about a bad Christmas. I wrote an article about this 1 year, 2 years ago, when everything was falling apart around me. And it ended up just being me, my daughter, and my son at Christmas. And it was last minute too. We had plans to do something that fell through. And it was just me and my crying kid. And we ordered Domino's and we watched movies. And I pulled it out. I pulled out this, not salvageable. It wasn't great, but it was something, you know. And I remember I wrote about it. I posted it. And there were people responding. They're like, this sounds like the dad's got issues. Why is the dad so worried about Christmas? It's really, maybe does dad have autism? I got all these weird comments about it. And I wanted to grab them and be like, no, I have Christmas issues, dude. I'm bipolar. I have Christmas issues. This bothered me that year. I've always worried about giving them a good Christmas. So I would do it through gritted teeth. And this is the first year where I'm not miserable yet. I'm going to say yet. because I'm not miserable yet. I don't think I'm going to be miserable. I'm putting things together, and I'm learning to overcome a lot of stuff. And I think telling you guys this story was a part of that. Hopefully feels better. Something that happens with these blogs is that I'll have a story in my head or something that I tell people over and over again, the story from my life, and then I'll write about it. And when I write about it, it's like gone. Like it doesn't, it's there. Like I still have it. Because I know this because I'll go back and I'll reread old blog posts and there'll be a story in it. And I'll be like, oh my God, I remember that. But I hadn't thought about it since I wrote it. Meanwhile, before I wrote it, it was in my head all the time. So hopefully this happens with the Cole story. Because it was pretty terrible. But you know, hopefully it's done. And hopefully this year kind of breaks that. I have a feeling that this is going to be a good one. I'm excited about holidays. I'm excited about giving my kids a good holiday. I'm excited about living that good holiday with them as opposed to just watching them and go, I did good. I made this awful day good for my kids. I don't want it to be an awful day for me. I want it to be a good day. And I hopefully that'll be what happens. Yeah. So that's what I wrote about on Wednesday. Now, on Monday was more traditional. I wrote about my son, Lucas. And I used the wrong story. And I'll tell you guys why in a second. On Monday, the story that I wrote was about teaching him to do things or like holding him to the same standard kind of that I would hold his sister to. It was, well, my nonverbal son doesn't like when I parent, like most kids, right? And the idea was that I make him do things. I make him take off his shoes. I make him, you know, help get dressed. I make him sometimes eat with a fork. I make him do everything. Yeah, he goes, washes his hands and all these things that he has to do that he doesn't want to do. He'd rather I just yank his shoes off or like just throw a shirt on him. So I make him do it, and it's like a hassle. So I try to give an example because I couldn't think of a good one. I didn't think taking his shirt off was, it would be weird. If somebody doesn't really understand, they'd be like, what is this? So I use the idea of the orange juice. Now, Lucas, if it was up to him, he'd have second breakfast. He likes to have extra meals. You know, he'll ask me for a sandwich right after he had, you know, waffles. I'm like, dude, no, you know, I'm not giving you an extra breakfast. And you start to compromise. I'll give you some pirate, but something little, you know. So what happens with juice, he wants juice all the time because he's 10. And 10-year-olds want juice all the time. If you ever watched Arrested Development, he's like Buster. He wants to get a hit of that juice box. It's always about getting juice into his system. But he's 10, and he has to have water once in a while, right? So I don't want to give him juice all day. What if we're out somewhere at someone's house, and they don't have juice, they only have water? They're going to have a tantrum, you know, can't have that. We go to a restaurant, they don't have free refills, I'm going to spend $140 on juice? No, he's got to learn to drink water once in a while. So I try to push it on him. And I told the story as an example, and I prefaced it right in the beginning by saying that he's not happy all the time. My son is not happy all the time, even though we have special needs. People don't understand. Sometimes they think that someone with special needs is always happy. And the idea was to show that, you know, he, just like his sister, if I was to make him do something he doesn't want to do, he's going to fight on it. So whenever he asks about orange juice, which I said I was going to play the sound, it sounds really weird on his device, and I said I was going to play the sound from the device on the podcast. So this is how his device says orange juice.
Orange juice. Orange juice.
Yeah, what is that? Why does it say it like that? It's so weird. So I hear that. I hear that orange juice, you know, that weird kind of way of requesting it over and over again. I give him water. He doesn't want the water. He hands it back to me. It's this whole thing. And he swats it away and he gives me a face and he's unhappy. So I just thought that was a good example. But you guys, and I love you guys for this. I really do. I love you guys for this. Everybody explained to me ways to get him more orange juice, which I thought was sweet. Everyone, well, you can dilute it. I'm like, I do dilute it. They're like, well, why don't you give him the sugar free? I was like, the point is not, it's not to, how do I get this kid more orange juice? I'm trying to show you that I'm not giving him orange juice. I'm making him drink water and he's unhappy because that's what parents do. Well, what if you were to put some water in the orange? Like, oh my God, yes. I know, I could. And that's the thing, man. Our instinct, me, you, I think a lot of people, is just to like, let's just give the kid juice all the time. Let's just load him up with it. Yeah, he'll be happy with it. But I don't know, I want him to learn kind of that back and forth of the world because you know what? The world isn't going to cater to him. I will. We all will. The whole family will cater to this kid. We love him. He's our guy. I cater to my daughter. Same deal. But the same thing with her. You know, you got to eat your vegetables. You got to drink some water. You got to move around. You got to do stuff. And that was the point. So that's what I gave it out there. But I definitely wanted to bring it up to you guys. I thought it was sweet. Every single person was like, well, you could. What if you got him orange juice that's made of like, I know. He can. I could give him water all day. And I do cut the orange juice. I get him that orange juice for kids version. I get him all sorts of different things. But yeah, how much orange juice can he really drink. He needs to drink some water now and then. You got to get your pee clear, as they say. So hopefully that's helping out too. But I'm glad you guys really, it was very sweet. Every time I read a new comment, I was like, it's another one about how to get more orange juice. I thought it was, it showed how caring you guys are. And I really appreciate that. So thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah. So with that said, I don't know. Why don't we feel old?
In my day, we had radio, and you couldn't see anything, and it was primitive and lousy, and we liked it.
Yeah, do you want to feel old? I'll tell you a good way to feel old. Watch old television shows. Now, I know a few weeks ago I did a Moment of Sanity. It was about Different Strokes, going back and watching Different Strokes, how it didn't really hold up. It was simultaneously my least favorite show of all time and my favorite show of all time. It gave me kind of those warm memories that you get when, you know, something is almost like a security blanket. You know, something you remember from your childhood, whether it's He-Man or Mighty Morphin Power Ranger, something like that. You love it. You know you love it in your heart. But then to go back and rewatch it, it doesn't really hold up. But still, there's something about it, that kind of TV. That's what I'm talking about. Go back and find a show like them. For example, Mr. Belvedere. I'm a huge Mr. Belvedere fan. I think a lot of people who know me know of my love for Brock Toon. AKA Lynn Belvedere. We had a gecko. Was it a gecko? Yeah, it was a gecko. That was the exact. It was like a little lizard pet that we had a few years ago. We named him Mr. Belvedere. There were two Mr. Belvederes because the first one died immediately and I didn't want my daughter to know, but his name was Mr. Belvedere. Mr. Belvedere has been a part of my life since I was a kid. I always wished I had a Mr. Belvedere in the house. I always used to think about that, how cool that would be to have this smarky British butler helping out, stuff like that. So I love this show. Go back and watch a show like Mr. Belvedere from your youth, and you will feel old for a bunch of reasons. I'll tell you all of them right now. First of all, it doesn't look the same. In your head, when you think of TV when you were a kid, it is beautiful. It's pristine. It's brand new television, right? But then you go back and you rewatch it, and you're like, why is this so grainy? Why is the screen so weird? And it's like, well, because it used to be a square. And you have this real jump, and for a while we didn't have it. We don't have it right now either, where I remember when I was a kid and they had Nick at Night shows, and they were all black and white. And you would watch the black and white shows, and they felt like 100 years ago. Well, now we found the new one for the new generation, which is anything that isn't a rectangle, anything that isn't HDTV feels like it's from 100 years ago. I don't know what the next stage is going to be, because right now if you watch TV from like 2009, it looks like it was done yesterday. So eventually I think we're going to blow past HD and it's going to be, you know, doesn't TV look weird, you know, when all the characters don't jump off the screen? I don't know, whatever they're going to do. Something weird is definitely on the horizon. We never really hit the end of the glass ceiling. So eventually TV from today is going to look old. But right now, TV from when I was a kid looks old. So there's that. There's also the politically incorrect way that these shows are written. Mr. Belvedere, which was a family show. It was on like at 8:30 on Friday. It was about a family in Pittsburgh. Had so many homophobic jokes in it. I can't even begin. I was shocking. Shocking, man. I couldn't believe it. I was like, is this real? There was a scene where they were at a marriage retreat, right? George and Marcia, which is Bob Uecker and his wife. I don't remember her name. Maybe it'll pop to me. I don't know. Anyway, they're at a marriage retreat. And George Owens, Bob Uecker, is talking to another guy there. And he's like, oh, this thing is so tough. He's like, my wife dragged me out of here. And the other guy's like, yeah, I know how it is. These things just bore me. And George, you know, is like, well, yeah, these things are, you know, they're kind of just bad-mouthing this marriage retreat. And as they're talking, this big guy with a mustache walks over to the guy that he's talking to. And he goes, something like, we're going to be late or something like that. And he's like, oh, I guess I have to go. And Bob Uecker doesn't say anything. Just makes this like, boing, like kind of like, what kind of face? And then backs away from the two men and the laugh track plays. You watch that in 2021, you're like, what the hell? How is that a comedy bit? And there's a couple of parts. I mean, there's one part where his son was trying to get into a fraternity and he's dressed as a woman being hazed. And Bob Uecker's like, hey, Kev, what's going on? And he's like, oh, you know, I'm just trying to get into the fraternity. They make me dress like this. And he's like, oh, just want to make sure your cheese didn't fall off the cracker. And I'm like, holy God in heaven, what the hell? So yeah, if you want to feel old, go back and watch what used to be TV and the jokes that people made and the things that were accepted and the laugh tracks that were played after things like this, and you'll feel old. Finally, for Mr. Belvedere, here's the thing, and this is really kind of only for Mr. Belvedere. I haven't really noticed in other shows. Mr. Belvedere must have had some really old writers because they would make jokes that I didn't understand. Reference people. I had no idea who they were. And as a kid, you kind of deal with it because you figure you're a kid. I don't know anything. I'm a kid. You know, I know who Ronald Reagan is, Gaddafi, I think I heard of, that kind of stuff. But most of these other people, I don't know who they are. So they did a joke, and I forgot what the name was, man. Let's say Eddie Izzle or something, right? And he was like, you know, the guy's like announcing this time for dinner, and someone's like, yeah, why don't you relax a little bit, Eddie Izzle? And the, you know, the laugh track plays. But now it's 2021, and I've got Google. So I Googled the name that they referenced. It wasn't Eddie. I mean, whatever the name was. I'm just throwing a name in there, but it was a different name. I Googled it, and it was the star of radio before before TV, because Mr. Belvedere came out like in the mid-80s, so 85. So you got to figure 40 years prior to that was radio. So whoever wrote the show was obviously from a past generation. It would be like me making a reference or somebody making a reference today to something that happened in like 1981. How whacked out is that? And that's what it was. So it was a radio reference. It was a reference that nowadays, if we were to make, it would be like 80 years old. So nobody makes that reference anymore. Nobody knows who the radio stars are. Every once in a while, I get caught up in a rabbit hole on Google where I start, you know, on IMDb and I start on Wikipedia and I start looking up old actors until eventually I get back like as far back as possible and I find these weird celebrities that nobody even thinks about anymore. And I feel old when that happens. So eventually one day, hopefully, knock on wood, we can all get to the age where we're so old that the people who are famous when we were kids are not even known. So we'll see if that happens. But that is the surefire way to feel old. Watch old TV. Watch things that you used to love, things that meant a lot to you, and you will definitely feel like you are in the future, because I'm in the future. Yeah. And with that, let's go to the moment of sanity.
Hi, Pod. This is your moment of sanity.
All right, so let's talk the moment of sanity. The moment of sanity is a moment from my life, a story, a situation, something that, well, just reminds you, I don't know, to just be. This one in particular reminds me to stick it out, just do your thing. The cream rises, as they say, and the Randy Savage, if you guys have never seen that Macho Man Randy Savage promo with the coffee cream, the cream, yeah, it's like very much so something to live by. The idea that if you stick it out and you continue things on, good things happen. And my story this week, again, takes you back to my childhood. It takes you back to high school, Lindenhurst High School, if you will. And a story that's coming to me because I've been talking to my daughter about it. She's getting kind of that acting bug. She likes to perform. She enjoys that stuff. So I told her a story about when I used to do these one-act plays in high school. And it wasn't the musical. The school musical was a big production. I had tried out, actually got into one of the school musicals. I wasn't able to do it for a number of reasons. Maybe some I'll talk about one day, but that's not for today's show. The one-act plays, though, were a little bit easier to do. The rehearsals were quicker. They were shorter. It happened at a more convenient time. And in ninth grade, I was the lead in one of the one-act plays. It was called Alexander Proposes, and I was Alexander. And it was all right. It was really kind of a corny, I don't say corny. Nah, it's corny. It was corny. It was a corny kind of play. The woman who was running it, Miss Kate, I'll call her. How about that? Instead of using her real last name, was an interesting lady. She was an English teacher. She, you know, she had her cats. She lived with her mom. Very much into literature. I don't know how to put it. Yeah, the type, if you met her, you'd get what I'm saying. She was into a play like this. The play was called Alexander Proposes. It seemed like it was something straight out of Pride and Prejudice. The idea being that it was about a woman. She lived with her her aunts or her sisters, maybe her aunts. I think it was her aunts. They were giving her advice on this boy that she wanted to marry her. So the boy shows up and he's going to marry her. He has a ring. He's excited. He's going to ask her. But this girl hilariously takes advice from all three aunts, all very different advice. She comes back in. It's like crazy. She has all these different personalities. Alexander doesn't know what to do. It's ridiculous. It was like a Hugh Grant kind of, oh, what am I doing? I don't know. I was Alexander. I crushed it, obviously. I wrecked it, man. I killed it. To this day, it's funny. I'm friends with the girl who played the fiance on Facebook. It's a very strange situation when you're able to look back and you grow up with these people who played a role in kind of your childhood, and then you see them, they're adults now, and then you're an adult and you feel old. We already talked about that. So that was ninth grade. 10th grade now, I had had her as a teacher. She didn't like me. I clashed with a lot of teachers in high school and middle school. I was a rough kid at times. I don't say troubled kid, but I caused trouble. I caused some issues. I wasn't the worst. And by the time senior year came along, I started to kind of figure things out, how to be independent, how to be in your face without being abrasive or kind of torpedoing my own scholastic career. But 10th grade, I didn't. And 10th grade, I had Miss Kate. And Miss Kate was a wacky doodle, and Miss Kate did not like me. So when the time came for one-act play auditions, she gave me a role in the 10th grade play, and my role was the voice of a parrot. Yeah, that's what she gave me to do. I had to sit off stage and read my lines like that. That's what I did. And she was open about the fact that she was giving me this role because she didn't like me. Said it. Told me. Said, you know, I was too much to deal with. Don't want to deal with me, this whole thing. So I'm doing the play, and I went from being the lead to being almost nothing. And I thought, why am I doing this? Maybe I shouldn't do it. But I did it anyway. And I stuck it out, and I continued. And then the day of the play came along. And as we're doing it, the girl who was the lead, I forgot what the story was. I really have no idea what it was. All I knew was I was the pet parrot, and they were all interacting or whatever they were doing on stage. The girl who played the lead forgot her lines, like all of her lines. Now, this is a story that sounds like you're going to be like, I saw this in a TV show, and you may have, but it actually happened in my life. She would forget her lines, and she went out there and you know, she's like, oh, I guess maybe I should perhaps, and I'm listening to her struggling, and I'm sitting off stage, and I have the words in front of me and everything. I went, God, maybe you should put some tea on the kettle. And she's like, oh, I'm going to go put some tea on the kettle, and the audience laughed. And with that one line and everything that followed, I turned this dramatic play, I don't know if it was comedy, it was mostly drama, into a comedy where the parrot just spoke, and the parrot just fed the girl all of her lines, you know. Maybe you shouldn't let him in the house. No one's home, you know, ha ha, everyone laughed. And I did that the whole time. I guess I saved the day. I don't know how else to put it. It ended up being a memorable experience for me, and it turns out to be a memorable experience for Miss Kate, because after the play, she had me come down, and she brought me over to this older woman who, it turns out, was her mother. I don't know if she was in a wheelchair or she just didn't feel like getting up. She was sitting there. Told me how great I was. I was so funny. I was wonderful. Oh my God. It was amazing. This lady was like my biggest fan. You know, Mama Kate. Next day at school, Miss Kate comes up to me and she goes, my mother said that you were very funny and that she loved you in the play. And she got mad at me because I didn't give you a bigger role. So next year I have to give you a bigger role. And she did. The following year, there was a story called The Dearly Departed. It's about a family who thinks the grandfather is dead. They all divvy up his money. They're all fighting about it until the grandfather, turns out was just sleeping upstairs, comes down and just tears into everybody. And I got to be the grandpa. And again, I crushed it. I loved my, I guess it was 11th grade, one-act play. I'll always remember. I would ad lib. I would do things like that. And I enjoyed it. But this was a story that I love because I don't have to change anything. There's really nothing changed in most of these stories, but usually I'll have a story and I'll look at it and I'll be like, I gotta kind of wrench sometimes a moral around it. This one, it's just right in front of you. I could have quit. I could have said, screw this lady and her bird and all this other stuff, and nothing would have happened. She would have left me out of the 10th grade play. Her mother never would have seen me. She never would have realized that she should have given me a bigger role. She would have gone on with her life. I would have gone on with my life. But I didn't. I liked doing these plays. I enjoyed doing these plays. I knew that I would do it no matter what the role was. I think sometimes people audition for something and they only want to be the lead. People, you know, join something only to be the president, when in reality, you should join it because you love it. And I loved doing this. To this day, I love doing it. I haven't gotten to be on stage or act or any of that in like, you know, decades, but I don't know, I like it. I like kind of getting out there pretending to be other people. It's fun. And it was fun for me then. So I did it. I stuck it out. And in the end, I ended up getting to a place that I felt that I deserved to be at. And that's a story that I want my daughter to take with her. That's a story that I want my son to take. That's a story that I think everyone should take with them. Don't give up. Keep doing what you're meant to do. And if you do, eventually good things happen. That was always the irony. That was always the funniest thing that I thought, where people say things about, you know, would you rather make money or would you rather be successful? You know, and they compare it like, you know, you may love art, but wouldn't you rather make money doing, you know, real estate or something like that? It's like, well, if I love art and I know that I have a talent for art, in my mind, the highest potential to make money down the line is art. It's a gamble, yeah, but you might if you're good at it. And that's it. So if you really genuinely love something, if you love something and you want to do it, then do it. Don't let anyone stop you. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. I don't let anybody tell me I'm not what I am, you know? I know what I am. And I enjoy being the person that I am. And I enjoy pursuing my interests and pursuing my loves. And it's important to just continue on with that. So hopefully this story does something to you guys. Anybody who's listening out there that needs that little extra piece of inspiration, maybe you got it from my story, maybe you didn't, but just know it's real. Miss Kate is out there. I don't know. I haven't thought about her in a long time, but yeah. And what's funny too is if you're from Lindenhurst and you hear me saying this, you know who I'm talking about. That's who it was. So it was a pretty interesting time period for me. And I appreciate that you guys give me the opportunity to talk about this, talk about all my stories, all the things that I have in my head, all the things that helped me by getting them out, speaking about them and sharing with you. I appreciate all your support. Thank you. That does it for me. I hope everybody listening out here in the States, I hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. I will be back here next Friday with a new edition of HiPodOmDad.com. If you're not in the States, I hope you have a good Thursday. And I'll be back next Friday with a new edition of HiPodOmDad.com. Till next time, James Gutman, be well. Bye, Pod. I'm Dad.